are listening to WWBC Coco, Merritt Island, 1510 AM, as well as W234BI Coco, Rockledge, 94.7 FM, W264AS, Rockledge, Melbourne, Palm Bay, Indy Atlantic, Indian Harbor Beach, Satellite Beach, 100.7 FM, and W260CL, Coco, 99.9 FM.
Space and Treasure Coast. This is Sita Begee on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right here on AM 1510. Our dial on the radio to listen in is WWBC. We're also on FM 94.7, 99.9, and 100.7. We're also heard on the World Wide Web. Thank you, Samantha, for posting that all over the place. Ellen, you know we are.
1510 WWBC. You can go right on that page and hit the on-demand button, and you'll find... You'll be able to listen live for today's show, as well as look at all of the archive shows for all of the future shows that are coming up.
Look at those. So on Mondays, this is an extension of our life, I should say, our living room. It's kind of fun. I kind of incorporate the show into my life, so I know exactly what I'm doing on Mondays. And thanks to Paul for running our board and producing our shows. It's just phenomenal. We sit here, Ellen, myself, and Samantha, and we talk about kitchen table topics. We talk about things that are going on right here in Brevard County and around the world. And boy, we like to chat.
Yes, we do.
Yes. It's easy to have a show when your heart's in the right place. It's easy to have a radio show. And this is for my friend Kim Meredith, who's sitting here and listening back there, who'll be starting her own show soon, Ellen.
Right. A week from Thursday, October 15th, 14th? 14th, yes. What's cooking in the 3-2-1 with Kim Meredith? Yeah, so you want to tune into that because Kim is a longtime local resident and done a lot for the community throughout the years. So we're real excited to be able to participate in her show as well.
That's right. And, you know, the good thing about having your own show is, you know, we learn from each other. We learn from reading about other people's cultures, other people's history, other people's religions. We learn about life from just reading and understanding and reasoning, right? And so you can take that and put it into words and actions. And some of us are born to lead, and some of us have to embrace what we have and use our voice and our platform in a positive manner. And thanks to Ellen and ABWA and a lot of people along my life, I've learned to embrace who I have become as a human being with what's left of my earthly journey called life.
That's right.
Right? And so I met Kim quite a few times, and Kim came to pick up a few signs when I was running for state representative here in good old Red County, Brevard, which I did not win, but I made a dent, I think. And Kim came to pick up some signs, and I said her car was packed with restaurant stuff. She had her children in there and stuff, and I said, she's a keeper. And so I am grateful to God that I'm able to share my knowledge and experience and give it to Kim so she can have her own show on the station talking about food.
Amen.
Right. So that's how it goes. It's selfish to keep that kind of knowledge to yourself. And one of the other people that I met on, you know, while speaking about meeting great people, I was watching CNN one day, and they were talking about the Lorena Gallo story, who was then Bobbitt. And I saw this beautiful attorney on CNN, and her name was Shelley Taylor Page. And I liked what she had to say about helping with that case. And I said, I'm going to track that woman down. And I did. And I'm so grateful that I did, because she has a voice like no other. She understands humanity. She understands people. She understands why we are all spiritual beings on this journey together. And she's giving back through her profession. She's a law professor. And she's calling in on our show today. And I know she's on the phone and she's saying all these wonderful things about herself. But Shelley, I actually mean it. I follow you on Facebook. I follow your career and I see what you're talking about with your students and what you're teaching them. And I'm so grateful to call you my friend and know that you're a professor of law and you're taking time to call in on our show today. So welcome.
Thank you, Sita. It is actually a pleasure to know you. It really, really is. You are an inspiration, not just for me, but for countless other people that you have no idea whose lives you're impacting for the good every single day. So I thank God for your voice and for your kindness in sharing the knowledge and wisdom God has blessed you with.
Thank you. Well, you know, sometimes I put up a Facebook post, and I think I try to make like a little message out of it. And this morning, I was looking at my husband and how he was holding the little baby. And I thought about, you know, here I am. I'm Indian, but born and raised in Trinidad and Tobago. I was born a Hindu. He's from the Middle East. He was born in Tehran, Iran. He was raised Muslim, but he's not practicing right now. But, of course, he's a good, decent human being. And, you know, and I'm looking at the picture and I'm thinking, there is a reason why God made things happen in my life, that my best friend is a Jewish girl, that I've learned so much about that religion. Then my husband was born Muslim. I am Hindu. My children love Jesus. And so here we are. We are the United Nations. And it's imperative that people like me take what has been given to us and use it in a positive manner to kind of bring the world together, because as we see, there's so much going on in our world right now with income inequalities, with hate, with division, with all these things that you teach about, bigotry, racism, and all this institutionalized racism and all that. And it makes me wonder, like, where are all the other people like us? And I forgot to mention in our studio today, we have the Zonta Club who's listening, Shelley. And we've got Suzanne and Donna is here to represent the Zonta Club of Melbourne, and they're here sitting in with us as well, listening to you. So
Suzanne and Donna.
Yeah, yeah, and they.
Nice to meet you, beautiful ladies.
And we have Ellen and Samantha on the other mic. So tell our listeners a little bit about yourself and where you teach and all that before we get started.
Yes, Suzanne, Donna, Ellen, and Samantha. Hello, and to all of the listeners. So my name is Shelley Taylor Page. I have been a law professor since 2004, licensed attorney in Texas and Tennessee. I'm actually currently on a sabbatical from teaching, but I generally teach criminal law, criminal procedure, evidence, civil rights, education law, human trafficking, international human rights, and domestic violence law.
Right up there, Allie.
Yes, when you just think about like some of the classes that I just named, most of my classes and my research focuses on exploitation of people throughout the globe. And so even as we are living right now, looking at the economic inequalities that exist in America, but across the world, as you look at the unequal distribution of money and opportunity between different groups in society, it's very hard to explain why certain groups seem to get ahead and certain groups perpetually, consistently, historically, are underrepresented and marginalized. And that's really what my research looks at.
Right. And you're so right, though, because as we get older and wiser and bolder, and we sit down and we have those moments where we think about life in general, you really do want people to have a full stomach when they go to bed at night. You really do them to have a home.
Right.
You want them to have health care. And the people that don't, something I think is wrong with them, because I was just reading that a Gallup poll finds that 2/3 of Americans are unhappy with the nation's distribution of wealth. And experts say it may be slowing down the economy. So, Shelley, do you think it matters if some people are richer than others?
I do think it matters. And I think that in the Bible that I read and the God that I serve says that we have to be our brother's keeper. And so if I am blessed to be a multimillionaire, God forbid a billionaire, I believe that part of my blessing is to bless others. I don't believe that God just will give Sita and her husband a ton of resources for you to hoard and hold on to those resources when your neighbors, when your brothers and your sisters don't have clean running water, don't have adequate education, don't have access to health care. When we look at the number of people, we just made on, I think, Friday, 700,000 people in this country have died from COVID. Not globally, in America. It's more globally, but I just wonder how many of those people did not have access to adequate health care prior to contracting COVID and then dying. And how many of those families are now right now in debt paying for hospital bills for their loved ones who passed away from this tragic disease, and they now don't have the money to even pay out the bills or even do a proper burial. That is, so it does matter when people have, the vast majority of wealth is controlled by a very small percentage, how we say the one percenters. That does matter.
Right. And, you know, and the thing is, too, that it causes people to borrow money recklessly when they're poor.
Mm-hmm.
Because you look at, like I was just saying to my friends here in the studio, you know, I had my children very young when I was 18 and 19, and I was poor, Shelley. I think I told you I had $5 in my pocket when I came to the United States, and I lived in an efficiency that was overrun with cockroaches. I didn't have anything for my daughter. I relied on the goodness of strangers for clothes and shoes, and it was an awful thing. And I was just saying that, you know, it does make a difference when we educate our girls and our boys to have children when you are spiritually, mentally, physically, emotionally able. Because I look at little baby James and he's not going to be living with no cockroach, you know, but my older daughter, Kimmy, certainly did, you know, and I say that a lot of what we talk about with income inequalities comes from the foundation that we build at home with the people we love. Mm-hmm. How do we address this to more people that, hey, in order to get that wealth gap up, in order to not borrow recklessly, in order to have something, like, you gotta look at the home in which you are raising these children.
Yes, I totally agree. And so, Sita, what I believe that God expects us to do is spread the knowledge that he's given us with the people that he allows us to come in contact with. And let me just tell you, I have absolutely no problem telling a young African-American male, keep your penis in your pants unless you need to urinate, period. And I will say that to any young man that I meet. If you don't have a job, if you don't have an income, if you don't have a future where you have economic stability, you don't need to be having babies.
You sound like my dad. When they were arranging marriages for the girls in our family, and we would say, well, there's a boy that likes me. You know, the first thing they would say, well, is he ambitious? Does he have a job?
Mm-hmm.
Does he have money in the bank? Does he have a car?
Yes.
I mean, does he have anything that, and God forbid you come home and say you're pregnant, the three words they would say, who is going to mind it? And that
put the fear of God
into people. Where did we lose that in this country where fathers are not being held responsible for the children they bring into this world? Why? I mean, we just had the Women's March and all these women had signs. We're all protecting our wombs and we're protecting, you know, our reproductive health and the right to bear children and when and with whom, right? But these men, I mean, when are they going to be held accountable? Because 100% of the pregnancies are caused by men.
Yes, that's right. That's right. So I think it's a more nuanced and complicated answer than just where are the men. I think that we need to look in certain communities to see why, again, going back to economic inequality, why certain communities are not afforded the same economic opportunities of other places. So when we have predatory lenders coming into poorer communities and financially exploiting people who are trying to borrow money, that's a problem. And so when we have over-policing, over-incarceration, mass incarceration, when you have black men in prison for nonviolent offenses and they've been given a life sentence, that's a problem. When we know that for a white man, 1 in 7 chance of him going to prison, for a black man, 1 in 3, that's a problem.
Definitely the root causes. And I see Suzanne is shaking her head. You want to jump in here, Suzanne?
No, please do.
I was just going to say everything's interconnected in the world. You can't just separate any of these topics from one another. They're all interconnected.
There. It goes right along with what we talk about, root causes of what happens, right? And I know, you know, like I'm from the Caribbean, and I think what it is when we immigrate to the United States, we don't come with the load of the issues that the people in the civil rights movement face. We don't have those burdens, right? The challenges and the burdens. And so it's easy for someone to immigrate to the United States from Sweden or, you know, Africa or Trinidad or wherever they're coming from, and you don't have that on your back. So you're coming with one aim, to work, right? And so people say, well, look, I came and I did really, really well. But once you delve into the history and the institutionalized racism and all that, then you say, wait a minute, they had something that was spoken about in their homes and their communities that we didn't have. So would you say then that it's become harder for someone who was born poor to become rich in today's world?
So I believe it depends on, like you just gave the example of, where are you from? It is harder for poor people of color in this country to move ahead to become wealthy. If you came from another country where you don't have the history of racism and oppression that we do in this country, because my ex-husband is from Trinidad and Tobago.
Yeah, that's another reason why I like you.
yes. And so I know the culture of Trinidad and Tobago. I know we were married for almost 20 years, and I know I saw him working his butt off. He did not ever have to stop and think about what it feels like to be called a nigger. When I was in law school at Texas Tech, I think it was my second year in law school, I never got called a nigger until I got to law school. And I'm from Texas. Went to law school in Texas. Darren Dufourne sat in class and called me a nigger. Reynaldo Valencia, my professor, did not correct him. Not one student in class stood up for me. I was
that's hurtful. You know, I feel like that's hurting me now for you back then. And it's so sad that people didn't speak up.
One person said a word, but see, you know, God allows everything to happen for a reason. It taught me I can't rely on somebody else to speak up for me. I can't wait for the goodness of Abraham Lincoln to come along and do something to help me. I have to stand up for myself. And trust me, I did stand up for myself that day. And I hope I was the last person he ever called a nigger, because you can rest assured I did not let it go. And look, that was 1992. And here it is, 2021. I still remember his name. I remember the class. I remember the day that I was called that. But when you have people who come from France and Italy or the Caribbean or any, even African countries, who don't have the history of racism, bigotry, discrimination, and oppression, that people grew up in this country like me. I can give you a ton of examples, Sita, where I was discriminated against in this country where I was born and raised. And it starts to have a mental impact on the things that you do. When I walk into a grocery store and I don't get the help that I need, when I see another white female walk up and ask for the same thing that I'm asking for and they get help, or I'm trying to buy a car and it is assumed that I don't have the money to put a down payment, or it's assumed I won't have a good credit score, or I walk into a clothing store and I am followed. So I was a criminal prosecutor. I can tell you there is definitely discrimination in our criminal justice system.
Yes.
You know, you'll have a white male come in with a crime, and let's say his criminal history has five things. Black male come into my file on my desk, exact similar criminal history as the white male. Every single time the white male will get a criminal recommendation much better than the black male.
Yeah, you know,
that's
Van Jones.
I read in the book or I saw on TV. That's fact.
You know, Shishelle, Van Jones did a piece on that called Unconscious Bias, and he addressed all of that in that. It was on CNN. I see Samantha is shaking her head with everything you say, and I think she has something to add. Go ahead, Sam. Jump right in.
I feel her pain. I didn't know what racism was growing up in New York. When I moved to the South, I was like, oh boy, this is an awakening. I've gotten called part of the Can family. And like I said, you don't have without a Rican, you don't have American, so I'll take it. But I've gotten called Can. We live in a non-sanctuary county. I've had a lady pull out her phone because I'm talking to my mom in Spanish because I'm saying something private, and she threatened to call ICE. I'm light skinned, green eyes, and you know, I like to say all the time, I could pass for white until I open my mouth. So I totally understand your pain. I grew up in a neighborhood where we had all backgrounds, immigrants, it's Trinis, Jamaicans, Puerto Ricans, and I came here and it's great until I open my mouth. And I've seen it on my son's behalf as well. You know, he's come home and said, well, they're messing with me in school. What do they look like? Mom, they all look the same. They all got blonde hair and blue eyes. So even though it's a little, you know, our scenarios are the same. We try to give our kids a better life and bring them somewhere different. At the same time, somebody's going to point out that they're different.
That's right. And being different can be good. But you know what you have to do? You have to keep educating people, right?
And
so we just
do.
Want to tell our listeners, we're speaking with our friends, law professor Shelley Taylor Page. She was also like she just told us, a criminal attorney. And you know what I like about you, Shelley, is you're blunt and you're real. And I like it because, you know, I find too often people have to sugarcoat everything in order to conform to a certain way of thinking or to another person's way of what they want you to say or perceive what you should say. And so,
well, if they're waiting on me to do that, Sita, they better get in line. They really better get in line. And let me just say to Samantha, it is a sin and a shame that you are not free to speak Spanish on the phone, in public, to whoever you choose to, without someone having the audacity to question you speaking another language. And so one thing that I have to remind, this has never happened to me, the Karens and the Kens of the world have never, ever, I've never witnessed, and Samantha, if I saw somebody disrespecting you, I would stand up and I would say something, because I have to remind my European brothers and sisters, this land is owned, was owned before stolen by Native Americans, indigenous people.
That's right.
So when they came here, they were speaking another language. When they came here, they were speaking at least a language with an accent. So when you tell somebody to go back home, this isn't your home. You stole it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So let's be clear.
Well, and you know, the thing is,
nothing,
the truth hurts, right?
More than that. Yes.
And there was a good Samaritan. Yes. It happened in a KFC, and like three people did stick up for me. They were like, you don't know if she's, you know, an immigrant or not. Like, you can't offend her that way.
Well, I've had people say to me Facebook, I was just telling the ladies that a gentleman saw my sign on Facebook that I had this weekend for the Women's March, and basically said, you know, a woman's right is human rights, and we don't own the right to somebody else's womb. That was my custom-made sign from Staples that I paid $40 for. And so this guy on one of these very conservative websites, he says to my comment there, he says, so you like killing babies? And so I said, no, sir, I don't. I said, but what I do like is comprehensive sex education at an academic as well as trade at appropriate ages, and that I was blessed to have a tubal ligation after I chose that after my third child. And we have a scientist, and we have an attorney, and we have, you know, an engineer. And then he sent me a private message, you rock. Because sometimes I think what happens is people don't communicate.
Wow.
And you have to get to that point where you could agree to disagree and teach people that your way of thinking is probably what you are conditioned to think, but it's not the same for everybody. So, Shell, with the remaining couple of minutes, I wanted to ask you, what do you think, what does experts think is the best way to shrink the wealth gap?
We have to invest in women and marginalized communities. So some of the solutions, invest in women, invest in agriculture, reform some of the workplace laws, elect women who are progressive thinking to positions where they have the ability to make laws. And really, we have to invest in communities that have been marginalized and not just do lip service to, okay, we have DEI now, diversity, equity, and inclusion. One thing, you know, we say we want diversity, but the people who benefit from a system right now where they are allowed to stay in power, they don't really want diversity. They don't want diversity if it means the system is not going to continue to benefit them in the ways that it is. And so, Sita, one of the things that with that man, I wonder, why did he have to inbox you, you rock? Why didn't he say it publicly online?
That's he probably thing. Afraid another, his conservative friends would say, why are you agreeing with this woman with the sign?
Yeah, so anybody who tries to sneak into my inbox and say, hey, Shelley, I agree with you, don't come in my inbox. If you agree with me, you say it on my wall or you don't say it to me at all. But I don't give shelter to weaklings and to cowards who are not willing to stand up.
Well,
to
I screenshot it so later on I could use it to my advantage.
Good. Good. But in the future, Cesar, I would tell him, I would let him know, hey, I appreciate the DM, but you need to get on my wall.
That's
and
right.
Say that, because there are other people who need to understand. And see, it's not about putting anybody down. It's about us all coming to the table and sharing in the pie, and three people not getting 75% of the pie and 25% having to share, or, you know, the remainder having to share a small piece of the pie. We all deserve health care and education and to be free from brutality by law enforcement in our communities. We all deserve to have clean water. We all deserve to live in neighborhoods with trees. And where it's not toxic environments that create cancers. We all deserve that. And so how do we get there? We invest in underrepresented, marginalized communities with real money, and we give those businesses opportunities to truly thrive so that they can service the communities that have historically and systematically been oppressed.
Right. And I think what it is, to people have to make a plan to vote. Pay attention to, because that is the power that we all have. I mean, we've all seen that social factors and single-parent families are more likely to be poor than those families that ascend the income ladder with two parents' household, right? And so we need to tell people that.
We also need to recognize how Republicans are right now working actively to stop people from being able to vote. I'm in the process of editing an article with a journal, St. Thomas in Florida, and it is looking at voter suppression and how it is real. So it's more than just telling people to vote. We have to get out and vote, and we have to vote for candidates who support positions that benefit marginalized and oppressed communities. And Republicans know that when everybody gets out to vote and it is a fair, free election, they know they're not going to win, which is why they are actively working to suppress the votes right now in a number of red states.
You know, you get to that point in life where you ask yourself, what do some humans actually want? I mean, because really and truly, they all write these books about finding a purposeful life, giving back to your community, staying engaged, going to church and praying to God or temple or mosque or whatever.
Yes.
But then they come out, on they do all of this on a Sunday, and then on a Monday, it goes back to business as usual. Me, 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 me. Well, the bottom line is you're not supposed to go to sleep and wake up the next day and not be grateful for breathing, the breath that God gives us. And you're not supposed to be, you know, sitting down in your house, your job, your car, wherever you are, and not understanding that other people need the same things you have. Who died and left you in charge of having everything and being the top 1% and everybody else struggling and facing challenges that God knows is beyond our imagination? Now, our second part of the show is going to be about human trafficking, and I wish you could have been here with us for that, but we'll have to have you back on again, because you are the realest, that's my word, professor I know of law, and you've given back so much to so many of us, women of color, diversity here in the United States, and you motivate us to think about certain things, and I love you for that.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Suzanne, Donna, Ellen, Samantha, you guys have an amazing day. Sita, God bless you and keep you.
Thank you so much for a great, robust discussion here on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. But we're going to take a quick station break and hear from our sponsors. We'll be right back after these messages.
The Viewpoint with Sita and Friends is sponsored by the friends and family of Sita Begee, author of 18 Brothers and Sisters and founder of Simply Sita Skincare, and these great sponsors. When you need medical care and need it fast, MedFast Urgent Care is faster and less expensive than emergency rooms. MedFast is open 7 days a week, now with 13 locations, including one in Volusia County. With so many MedFast Urgent Care centers, there is a MedFast near you. MedFast offers top quality care that is close by, and the number is easy to remember. That is 321-MEDFAST. You just call 321-MEDFAST. No one wants to wait in an emergency room for hours and get even sicker when you get the high bill. What you want is medical care fast. That's why you call MEDFAST, where most patients are seen and treated in less than an hour. So when you need medical care fast, call 321-MEDFAST. MEDFAST. Champion Home Health Care, keeping your loved one happy, healthy, and at home. Available at 321-306-2551. Once again, 321-306-2551. Champion Home Health Care is ACHC accredited and licensed, Medicare certified, and a TRICARE provider. Champion Home Health Care, 306-2551.
There's something special about the place we call home. It's the place we live our lives, spend time with family and friends, and make our own. At St. Francis Reflections Hospice, we consider it a privilege to care for you wherever your home may be. We put our hands, hearts, and skills into providing high-quality hospice care in your home. To learn more about how we reflect life, love, and compassion, visit www.reflectionslsc.org.
Welcome back, dear listeners. This is Sita Begee on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right here in sunny Cocoa, Florida. We are heard on AM 1510, WWBC, FM 94.7, 99.9, 100.7, and on the World Wide Web, Miss Ellen.
All over the World Wide Web on 1500wwbc.com. You just hit that on-demand button, and it will take you to our live show. If you want to hear any of the archive shows, you just go to the Sita Media or the Sita and Friends. I believe it's listed on there. And go to the date, and you'll hear all of the archive shows. And don't forget, another quick plug for our friend Kim Meredith for What's Cooking in the 321 starting next Thursday right here on 1510 WWBC.
Right.
But now we have our lovely friends from Zonta.
Yeah, and you know,
organization near and dear to our heart.
And you know, Zonta, I met Claire Ellis at ABWA.
Me too.
Like Sandy, just like you, like we met,
me too,
right?
That's right.
ABWA is, you could tell our listeners, Ellen, a little bit about ABWA and how we all met?
ABWA is American Businesswomen's Association. It's a local group that we have here, but it's a national organization that focuses on helping women and
empowerment
on to network and find strength within your community.
Right, and I was pleased when I met Claire Ellis because she told me all about the Zonta Club and that the Zontians believe in making the world a better place by empowering women. The Zonta Club of Brevard Space Coast is here. We have Suzanne and Donna here to talk, and Claire Ellis couldn't be here. So she sent them, and they look like they're scared to death to talk on the phone. Right now on the phone.
They'll warm right up.
We weren't supposed to say
that. But we're going to bring them. We're going to make them chat. And what I like about Zonta is they're a group of leading global, it's a leading global organization of professionals.
That's right.
And they just don't help people here in the United States. They help people all around the world, from sewing machines, goats, whatever it takes to help a family to
right,
live.
Making an impact in an organization and a region that you know speaks about, once again, about equality and making sure that people aren't getting taken advantage of and providing an opportunity for people to make a business for themselves, just
right,
like with the sewing machines.
So, Suzanne, we're going to start with you. Tell us a little bit about your service and advocacy with the Zonta Club.
Well, I've been with the Zonta Club for over 20 years. I took a break when I had my two children because I wasn't able to devote my time. But I came back about 2 or 3 years ago, and since that time, the cause that I've taken the most interest in is passage of the Equal Rights Amendment. So that's the focus that I have in the Zonta Club. But the club itself deals with human trafficking and domestic violence and other issues regarding women. We give out a ton of scholarships for all different kinds of further education, and Donna definitely would be the person to talk about that more.
Right. And Donna, there's no better time than now to speak about giving back to our community, empowering women through service and advocacy and fundraising. So you tell us, how did you get started with the Zonta Club?
I met Sandy Mickelson through my uncle where she lived 20 years ago, and then 3 years after that I actually moved to Florida, and Sandy said, "You're now here, Donna, so come to a Zonta meeting." And I was hooked. So I definitely believe in giving back to the community, and I found a lot of items that I felt I could contribute to the club.
Yeah, and being a Zontian is it sure enhances people's lives, because everybody I've met who is a Zontian, they do empower and give back to this community. So thank you all. So we want to chat a little bit about the ERA. So tell us. I mean,
I'm still in shock when Sandy, it wasn't Sandy,
Claire.
It was when Claire was here the last time, and I was like, what do you mean that's not signed yet? I think a lot of people have that same impression.
A lot of people say that to me.
What do you mean?
Because people
right.
think it's a done deal, and it's not
right.
a done
it's
deal.
It's not a done deal.
It should be a done deal, absolutely. I can't think of any reason, I haven't heard any reason why it's not a done deal, but it's not. There was certainly a big push in the 70s, and the Congress passed the Equal Rights Amendment, and the constitutional amendment process requires it to be sent back to the states to be ratified. And 35 states ratified it back in the 70s and 80s, but we needed 38. So we were three short. And recently, starting in about 2017, the three states have now ratified it. So now we're at the 38. The problem is there was a deadline that Congress self-imposed. They were not required to impose a deadline, but they imposed a deadline for for the Equal Rights Amendment passage. So where we're at is we have the number of states, but we need the Congress to extend the deadline. And the House of Representatives has done so. They voted for that in March of 2021. The Senate is sitting on the bill. It's been introduced by a bipartisan group of senators, and we're just waiting for the Senate to take the bill up and pass it. And once that happens, then I think it's a done deal that President Biden will sign it.
So I'm sure there are people tuning into Viewpoint with Sita and Friends today, and they probably want to know what exactly is the ERA. And give us your elevator speech for someone who does not know what it is and what it entails.
Well, I think the easiest way to do it is to just read it. It's like incredibly short. The Equal Rights Amendment says, Section 1, equality of rights under the law shall not be denied or abridged by the United States or by any state on account of sex. Section 2, Congress shall have the power to enforce by appropriate legislation the provisions of this article. Section 3, this amendment shall take effect 2 years after the date of ratification. That's the part I hate. I don't know why we have to wait 2 years, but that's what it says. That's what the amendment says that they passed initially and that's been ratified by the state. So we need to go with it. But it simply says that women are citizens the same as men are citizens. Men are in the Constitution. Women are not mentioned in the Constitution except for the 19th Amendment, which gave us the right to vote.
I know, sometimes I feel sorry for women. I really do. Because it looks like we have like the whole world on our shoulders.
We do.
We have to worry about our children right when they have a cold, when they have a cough, if you have to call in. You have to worry about things in the house. It's kind of like we are the jack of all trades, the organizational gurus, and we don't get the respect for that.
Absolutely.
We need the respect, right?
Absolutely.
And so Donna, DeZonta says no to violence, and that campaign was launched in 2012. Tell us a little bit about what does DeZonta Club doing for Domestic Violence Month?
Domestic Violence Awareness Month was launched in October 1987 as a way to connect and unite individuals and organizations working on domestic violence issues while raising awareness on those issues. Over the past 30 years, much progress has been made in support of domestic violence victims and survivors to hold accusers accountable and to create and update legislation to further those goals. The Zonta Club of Melbourne continues to bring awareness to violence against women and girls. Our members are the ones out and about in our community talking about domestic violence, strangulation, and human trafficking. We continue to work closely with the Brevard County Sheriff's Office on our initiatives. Domestic violence is often thought about in terms of physical violence, but controlling behavior and other abusive tactics often begin long before any physical violence occurs. Not the talk that is normally held around the water cooler or coffee pot in the office in the morning.
Yeah, and you know what it is too. In order to help with this domestic violence, of course we know this is in October is the month. I think all of us have to have conversations not just with our girls but with our boys.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
because it's the little things that become big things, right? Mm-hmm. First, you start making fun of someone. Then you start, you know, saying things behind somebody's back. Then you start talking about people. And it escalates into then violence. So how do we train a community, our children, so that we start, when they're young, to teach them about bullying and violence and just ill-speaking people, that it's just wrong?
Communication needs to start in the home as well as in the schools. Melbourne High School, we have had service announcements that the students have recorded that they announced during the 16 days of activism, which is between November 25th and December 10th. The young boys in our world are just not getting the education, I feel, that they need, that it is not okay to hit a woman.
When you got to look at like the video games and all of the things that are out right now that are really, it promotes violence. Mm-hmm. It really does. I mean, all of that. So, you know, their natural reaction, children's natural reaction is to emulate, right? They see something, somebody thinks it's cool. Picking on somebody is cool somehow. And then all of a sudden they start emulating that behavior and they're not emotionally intelligent enough to realize that it's not the right
it's
thing to do.
It's bad behavior.
It's terrible behavior.
Yeah. But I also think it's...
But there's a lot of adults that then say,
it starts
okay.
at home. It starts at home. So you repeat what you see at home. It's what they learn at home. In my case, my son's been raised by a single mom, surrounded by women. he's too nice. I'm worried about him dating because he's that too nice guy. You know what I mean? He's the one that's going to dry your tears and fix your knee when you fall. He's too nice. And then you've got the two nice guys that are raised to respect. And then you have the other guys where if dad is a macho jerk, the kid is going to emulate what they see at home.
Right.
So you have these huge gaps between how women should be treated and how men think women should be treated.
Well, I sometimes get very dismayed and disappointed in the excuses we make as human beings for people with bad behavior.
Yep.
And it starts in not just in politics, in the workplace, in our families, in our neighbor. We see people who do stupid things and people look the other way and say, that's just how he is. And that bothers me because we all watched it play out the last 4 years in politics. And it's not just blaming one political party, it's both sides. So how do we get people in good leadership to start? And maybe, Suzanne, you could take that. It starts, leadership is when people set the tone for what's supposed to follow, right?
Yes, I think Professor Shelley hit the nail on the head that we definitely need to elect more women. I mean, any organization that you can think of, it shouldn't be run by all one type of person. It shouldn't be all run by white men. It should be like half men, half women. It should be a mixture of races. There should be diversity because women don't have an opinion that should rule the day and be the only opinion that is taken. It should be a mixture. People should be able to express their opinions, put it all in the pot, and figure out what works best for the most people and how to help the people that aren't benefited from being harmed by what you're doing, the action that you're taking. So I think we need to elect more women primarily. I think also we need to stop calling these issues women's issues. I think we need to call them human rights issues because that's what they are. When we call them women's issues, a lot of men think, oh, that's their problem. That's like women's work and women's anything. A lot of men are like, then that doesn't affect me in any way. But women's issue, what we call women's issues are human rights issues, and it affects everybody.
Yeah, and it should be seen as such.
Absolutely.
Donna, we have a question for you. What can individuals do when they suspect a situation of domestic violence is occurring? Because you don't want to step on anyone's toes, but how can you intercede?
A prime example, which has been a very high-profile case that's out there right now with the Gabby Petito. You need to call law enforcement. Luckily, law enforcement did intercede in that particular case. However, they did not feel at the time that it was escalated to a point where charges needed to be made, or maybe she needed an airline ticket to go home. But we Zonchans around the world commend that individual for calling law enforcement for her on her behalf.
Yeah.
So that's what you need to do is call law enforcement. There's a domestic violence hotline in Florida in particular. It's 1-800-500-1119. Or the National Domestic Violence Hotline is 1-800-799-7233.
Right. And it didn't help that the last couple of years with COVID, that a lot of the victims had to stay in the same house with the perpetrators. Yeah. And, you know, you read stories about people who wrote on their bill when they bought a pizza, I need help. You can't talk on the phone. You can't text. They control your finances, your emotional state, everything. I mean, did you all see an uptake in cases? You're shaking your head,
yeah,
during COVID.
Absolutely, the domestic violence shelters definitely had an uptick in phone calls since the pandemic hit. Absolutely.
Yeah. So one of the other things that the Zonta International and the Zonta Club of Melbourne is advocating for is against child marriages. So talk to us a little bit. What has Florida done to end child marriages?
Well, the Florida law did change. We were hoping it would be strictly for 18-year-olds. However, that's not what happened. The way they wrote it was a judge can sign an order if there is a request from a parent that a girl can be 17 years old, but she cannot marry anyone older than 19 in the state of Florida. So again, if there's a judge's order for a girl who's 17, they felt that was appropriate.
And unfortunately, Florida is one of the good states in that regard. Now there are 9 states in the United States that have no minimum marriage age. So potentially a child, 10-year-old, could get married. And there are stories of that happening in the United States, absolutely. So some of the state, two states have a minimum age of 14. What 14-year-old girl should be getting married? Absolutely not.
Yeah.
Absolutely not. Yeah. And that's just a microcosm. That's just a little bit of information about that.
Yeah, that's awful. So, Susan, while you're talking about that, what can people do to get on board with the ERA test to help to get it ratified?
Well, right now, as I said, it's pending in front of the Senate. So what they can do is they can contact our two senators, who are Senator Rick Scott and Senator Marco Rubio. And Marco Rubio is running for election next year, so hopefully he's listening to constituents and concerned about meeting constituents' needs. But they need to be told to support the Equal Rights Amendment bill that is now pending in the Senate. And if you don't know your other representatives as well, votebrevard.com is the Brevard Supervisor of Elections site. There you can do your own research about the Equal Rights Amendment. You know, certainly take my word for it, but equalrightsamendment.org is a really good resource, and GOP4ERA.com, and that's the number four, GOP4ERA.com is a really good website specifically run by a Republican state lawmaker who's trying to get the Equal Rights Amendment passed as well, because a lot of people perceive this as a Democratic issue, and it's not. Right. Republicans throughout the years have supported it. President Eisenhower, President Nixon, and President Ford, all three Republican presidents, and they all supported the Equal Rights Amendment.
Why is it taking so long? It doesn't make any sense, because I remember talking to Claire about this a couple of years ago, and there were people who were saying back then on Facebook and, you know, different social media sites, that were saying, well, everybody already have protection under the law in the United States.
Right, that's what a lot of people think. Yeah. But unfortunately, the only protection we have, other than the constitutional amendment that says we have the right to vote, we have no other constitutional right of citizenship. We have kind of, we're given rights, and there are certain statutes, like there's a statute that says we're required to be given equal pay and not be discriminated against. But they keep passing those laws. We keep getting new laws. So clearly there are gaps in what's already been done, and there will continue to be gaps until there's a constitutional amendment, which is the supreme law of the United States, that says women are citizens the same as men. So it'll continue to be a problem.
Sentence, right?
It's very simple.
I mean, because we bring these people into this world. They come through us.
Yes.
And why can't they look out for us, right? It's almost like I was talking to somebody this morning, and I said, look, when you hear about people saying things about the United States as an immigrant, naturalized citizen, right, came legally, you tend to say to people, well, you know, dude, you should leave the U.S., go live in another country for a few years, come back, and then you would appreciate the United States the way we do, right? And then you think about the thing with the woman, and you think about the advocacy that the Zonta Club is doing, and you hear about Zontians who have gone all over the world and looked at women who needs a goat to help them get milk to raise their children, who needs a sewing machine to sew clothes so they could sell for other places. And now we hear about bras. Talk to us about the bras. I mean, I know it's radio and we have to have a responsible voice, but talking about bras and covering the tatas should be as important as everywhere else. So talk to us about this,
and Jeannie
Susan.
Whitman had that bras, yeah, for a cause every mm-hmm. year that she was raised.
We support her too.
For, yeah, absolutely.
Yes.
So I was the band there.
Yeah.
Every year.
So let Suzanne talk to us a little bit about that.
Okay. I'm not the best person to talk to.
Donna.
Maybe Donna might know more.
Donna,
yes.
I'm looking at Donna.
That's a district project called Free the Girls. What that is for human trafficking survivors. They start a business with gently used or new bras, and that is how they support their families. So we collect those. And we have distribution sites all over Brevard County at the moment that we're collecting them. They go to a warehouse in Indiana where they're sorted, and then they're sent to Uganda, Mozambique, and another country that I don't remember off the top of my head, so that these women can start businesses to support their families.
Well, another way of empowering women. I remember
Absolutely.
Getting my first bra, and it was a hand-me-down. And by the time it got to me, the cloth, the material was falling apart because it went through all my sisters. And I was like, oh, it's my turn to wear this bra. And I was like, oh, but it has no material. But I still remember the thrill. I still remember that little, you know, well, I don't know, 10 or 11-year-old girl was just having buds saying, oh, I got a bra. So I know when you gave me that paper, that's what I thought about. That flyer that you all are collecting the bras, because I know in countries all over the world, people don't have the finances to buy a bra. And so who came up with this idea? Do you know, besides a human trafficking advocacy group?
I don't know who at the district level did it, but there's been draws, bras for a cause from Jeannie Whitman for years. She collected so many bras that we spent quite a while distributing them all over Brevard County. So people really came to the forefront. And
I had to giggle because there was a lot of, you know, upper class people that came to these
upper
events,
class bras.
Right? And there were some nice bras in there, let me tell you. And I'm thinking to myself, these women are going to get these bras, like, you know, these lace with, you know, animal print and stuff like that on them. I'm thinking they're going to think the Americans are crazy or something.
I know.
Whoever's getting them at the time.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about some of the other things at Zonta, the issues that the Zonta Club International and Zonta Club of Melbourne is working on. And it's one of the big ones that we always talk about is human trafficking. Let's go over some of the signs and symptoms that people should look out for, because we're watching what's happening with the hospitality industry and what's happening in Orlando and throughout the state of Florida. We're one of the states that human trafficking is huge. So talk to our listening audience, Donna, on Viewpoint with Cena and Friends, a little bit about the advocacy and what Zonta Club is doing to prevent human trafficking.
Well, human trafficking is all around us. The average age of the victims is 11 to 14-year-olds. Florida is still ranked as number 3 for the most calls received on the national hotline for trafficking cases. We are trying to educate youth by having open dialogue so that they feel comfortable to be able to talk to somebody when they feel something's uncomfortable that has happened to them, instead of them keeping it totally inside due to total fear. They can always call the human trafficking hotline at 888-373-7888. There's a group of subject matter experts that discuss their work with victims. It's being held this Thursday, October 7th at 6:30 p.m. This is sponsored by the Space Coast Progressive Alliance. It is free. It is open to the public. All you need to do is go to their website, spacecoastprogressivealliance.com, and sign up.
Yeah,
it's online.
You know, it is pretty rampant. And things that I saw for signs, and this was just recently, with COVID last year, everything was closed down. And there were 3 young men, 11 to 14 years old, selling those dollar store games and raising money. And it was to keep kids off the streets or keep kids off of drugs or something like that. And now no one was supposed to be going into businesses at this time. And here's these 3 kids walking the streets with this stuff to sell. That is like... If that's not a huge sign for human trafficking, no cars around, no parents around, no adults around, just kids walking along Wickham Road trying to sell these games.
Well, I think it all goes back to...
You got to look for these white vans that are dropping kids off,
right,
selling magazines, that kind of stuff. Those are all big, you know, they busted that huge ring right on 192
right,
and 95.
Well, I think it all goes back to all of us as a community advocating to look out for each other.
Absolutely.
And look out for each other's kids. In the old days... Neighbors looked out for neighbors. It didn't matter who was what race, what religion,
what color.
Yes, but back
then you were allowed to slap your neighbor's kid upside the head and not go to jail.
Right.
That's not
but
good.
That's where our system has failed our children, because in those days, your neighbor was watching because your mom was at work, because they could hem you up. Now that these days, if you grab somebody's kid, even if you're concerned, you might have a legal issue on your hands. So
well,
that's
we're
why
not supposed to hit people's
kids.
No, you shouldn't hit kids. No one should hit
but
children.
I miss those days.
Yeah,
they were better.
We don't want to hit somebody's kid. But here's the thing. With the disappearance of this Gabby Petito, the 22-year-old woman who disappeared, it has brought domestic violence on the forefront. She had bruises. He put his nail on her face. We saw that on CNN, the videos. But it also speaks to the larger volumes of when people disappear. Who's looking for them? And we're all watching with human trafficking, the traffickers zero in on people that they feel will not be missed. So how can we tell and educate our young men and women and our girls who are in colleges and schools and to pay attention to your surroundings, to the people you hang with? And if you feel something is fishy is going on, speak up. right? Something. And that's something that Zonta says, is if you see something, say something. Mm-hmm. So give our listeners the website for Zonta International. You're always looking for companies to partner up with you, with businesses and things like that. So give us your website when you're looking for volunteers and events and stuff.
Our website is zontaspacecoast.org. Or feel free to call me at 321-728-7508.
Yeah. And it's this month is also Domestic Violence Month, right? Mm-hmm. And all of us are hoping and praying that we could make a dent in what's happening in our country. We saw with COVID-19 what happened to women and girls being locked up in the same homes with the people who were supposed to be protecting them. But we're also noticing that because of the way people raised, they bring that bias to their jobs. We see police officers who go to houses but don't do anything. They walk away. What's happening with our country where people are turning a blind eye sometimes to violence against women? And maybe, Susanna, you could take this.
Well, I do have to say that it's way better than it used to be. I mean, I've worked in the criminal justice system. I'm an attorney. And it used to be that police would go to domestic violence situations, separate them, and walk away. And now, unfortunately, it's kind of gone to an extreme where somebody's getting arrested. You hear police officers say that in situations. Somebody's getting arrested as a way to separate them. So,
but you look at the Gabby Petito case.
Right, and that got a lot of attention. Well, and there were a lot of signs, right, that officer did miss, because he said, the first thought is that when you listen to that piece of tape is that she took all the blame on herself. That's what I said to my husband. You see, she's blaming herself, and he's blaming her, too. That's not right. Something's wrong with that situation, that both of them are blaming her. I said he needs to take a step
that
more into that situation.
That whole case bothers me a lot because, you know, when my daughter wrote the bar exam, she went to Europe to wait it out, right? Eastern Europe. And I had a folder at home, a binder, like Mitt Romney in his binder. I had the passport, copy of the passport, copy of the hotel, copy of the flight, copy of everything. Mm-hmm. Then I went to her boyfriend, who's now her husband, her fiancé. His passport, his military records, discharge, his mother's name, his father's name, everything was in a binder this thick. What has happened that young women are being allowed to just leave and go on these treks, God knows where, into the forest? And where are their parents?
I don't think anybody, I was commenting about that today. I don't know anything about Gabby Petito before she went on that trip with her fiance. I don't know, did they just graduate from college? All I know is she was living with his family and him, and that it took 10 days for her family to realize there was a problem, because it appears to me the boyfriend cut her off from her family and they didn't realize that she was missing until 10 days had passed.
But
and
look,
then it was too late.
In an Indian, Iranian, American family, you come back without my daughter, you're going to be answering some questions.
Right, but I don't think they even realized, because he had cut them off.
Oh, what a great show.
I know, and then it just fired right up again.
I could talk to you guys forever.
Thank you so much. And please consider joining the Zontans, who do a fantastic job here in Brevard County and all over the United States. CETA, once again, another fabulous show here on Viewpoint with CETA and Friends. Please tune in each and every Monday at 1 o'clock here on 1510 WWBC.
The preceding program may not necessarily reflect the views of the staff or management of WWBC.